Welcome to Camping Out, a podcast about interesting people, stories, adventures, and their impact in the world, usually through the lens of outdoor adventure. I am Dan Camp, and tonight I've pulled up a chair to the campfire with a man who's restoring our world's coral reefs one reef ball at a time, Todd Barber. After Hurricane Gilbert destroyed his favorite reef to dive on, Todd and his dad came up with the idea that would eventually become Reef Ball as a way to restore essential reef habitat across the world's oceans. Before that could happen, Todd would have to take a gamble, giving up a cushy, high-paying job to chase a dream. That gamble, well, it paid off. With over 1 million reef balls down in the ocean and a partnership with the country music legend Kenny Chesney and his nonprofit, No Shoes Reefs, Todd and his team are really, really poised to make a difference. It'd be a great time to pour yourself a preferred fireside beverage, grab yourself a chair, head on over to the fire, and get ready to hear from the one, the only, Todd Barber. Welcome to Camping Out. I am Dan Camp, and tonight I am sitting around the campfire with the founder, chairman, and charter member of the Reef Ball Foundation, Todd Barber. Todd is an expert in designed reefs and their applications to help rehabilitate vital reef habitats across the world. Coral reefs are the largest living structures on Earth and are often referred to as the rainforest of the ocean. These reefs are the lifeblood of the ocean. Their existence provides essential habitat in the form of fisheries, protects fragile coasts as a buffer to constantly crashing waves, supports global economies, provides food to millions, and they are even an essential component to developing new medicine and treatments. Todd's love for these wild spaces has led to the creation of Reef Ball and has attracted many supporters, including country singer Kenny Chesney. While climate change threatens to warm our oceans enough to wipe out these existing coral reefs, Todd Barber and the team at Reef Ball are seeking to restore these essential habitats one reef ball at a time. Todd, welcome to Camping Out.
Thanks, Dan. I'm really glad to be here. Thanks for the great introduction.
Absolutely. I'm super stoked. We were kind of talking a little bit off camera. There's always a research phase to these sorts of things, and researching what you guys are doing, researching your life has been really, really entertaining. And I'm really excited to flesh this out and hear what you guys are up to.
Great. Well, where would you like to start?
Well, I'd like to start with your preferred fireside beverage. That's kind of how I kick everything off. We are like sitting around a campfire here tonight, so I was curious what yours is.
Well, actually, since you mentioned that we have a partnership with Kenny Chesney, I've had to sort of switch my drinks around. And his latest is Blue Chair Rum, and they have a new mango flavor, which I haven't tried yet. So at my local store, we got the spiced rum tonight.
Nice.
And most of my life, I've been a Diet Coke drinker for all the trips I travel around the world. This kind of comes in a can, and I can trust the water source. So I'm going to mix the two together here and have a little bit of rum here. And it goes really well fireside. It kind of kills the bugs. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I hear you. My favorite Kenny Chesney song of all time. It's also my favorite Christmas song of all time is Christmas in Blue Chair Bay. So I got to go pick myself up some.
There you go. And I'm drinking in my silly pint cup, which has got a Reef Ball on one side and Kenny Chesney's organization, No Shoes Reefs, that donates the money to the Reef Ball Foundation to build more reefs.
Excellent. I love that. That's a great fireside beverage.
Well, this is squishy, right?
Okay.
So like if you're taking in your camping, you can pack it down, you have it on your boat, it won't break or do anything like that. Plus it's dishwasher safe. So it's another white thing. It's fireside.
Yes, that is
epic. What are you drinking tonight?
I've got Maker's Mark. It's the True Blue classic gentleman's bourbon. You can find
one
it in most places.
Yep, that's a good one too. Yep.
Excellent. My dad puts it very well that it's like an art form packaged, in these barrels and sent out, and it's affordable. So what's not to love about Maker's Mark?
There you go. And Jim Beam Black's not so bad either.
I agree. Jim Beam's underrated. I agree. Cool. Well, Todd, I want to respect our time and get in as much as humanly possible here because you're an interesting dude. So like every good story, I think the best place to begin is at the beginning. And I try to draw this parallel a lot in the people I talk to is, I think everybody has that moment, whether it be as a child or maybe later in life where things kind of clicked for them in their passion and love for the outdoor spaces. So I'd love to know like where you grew up and how you got involved in the outdoors.
Well, it all connects back into the story of how I got involved with free fall. But my father is a ride inventor. He makes the free fall, the Tower of Terror at Disney, and all kinds of rides that throw you around. So I was raised by an inventor, but my mom owned a dive shop and a backpacking store. So I was raised going outside, and I was also raised to be very creative. When I was 13, they used to take me to the Cayman Islands every year. And my dad's best friend was this hippie that from National Geographic that was happened to be one of the best photographers on staff, actually the last staff photographer for National Geographic. His name was Sam Abel. And he taught me photography. So I combined all three. So I would go underwater, take pictures. I would bring all my camping gear and you know, camp on the beach. But nobody else would dive with me. So I would dive every year in the same place and take a picture of the same coral reef. Well, later in life, when I was growing up and in college, we went to spring break with my dad and my brother, and we rented a sailboat, and we went to Bimini, actually where I'm going this weekend. Nice. In fact, I'm taking the same passage, 54 miles from Fort Lauderdale to Bimini. Wonderful. This time I was on a 40-foot Morgan boat, and Hurricane Gilbert was spinning up near Mexico.
Sure.
Well, we had 60-foot waves across that crossing. It should have been a 4-hour crossing. It took us 18 hours.
Wow.
And 60-foot wave is 120-foot from the crest to the trough. So by the time I got to the other side, I said I was never going to do an ocean crossing again. It's ironic going this week. But I thought I was going to die. Literally thought life was over. Mm-hmm. We finally saw land, finally made it. Long, long story about that. But that same exact hurricane wiped out the reef that I've been taking pictures of since I was 13 every year and watching the coral grow. And that really made me mad. And the picture of that reef looks exactly like a reef ball does today.
Okay.
And later my father and I were in the Cayman Islands, having a rum runner, which is ironic. Again, I'm still drinking rum.
old habits die hard.
Yeah. He said, why don't you do like you do in that fish tank that you have at your house where you were growing all those corals? Why don't we take a piece of concrete and put it on the bottom? You can plant all those corals and grow it into your reef again, and we'll put it back. I said, well, Dad, you can't do that. There's a reef line out there. You'd never get a boat in there because it was like a shallow bay. I would dive right off the beach.
Yeah.
And it just wouldn't work. Besides, we can't afford a boat and a barge and a crane and all that kind of stuff. And he scratched his head and he said, what if you took a great big beach ball and you packed concrete all around it? And we rolled it into the beach and you could float it out there. Took a knife and stabbed the beach ball and pulled that out, let it sink to the bottom, and then plant your corals. And I scratched my head and said, no, that's a crazy idea. And the idea kind of died there. A few years later, I had gone on to a master's degree in London and was in management consulting, making six figures, flying around the world, 120-hour work weeks. Mm-hmm. My dad called me up and said, you remember that idea we had? I said, yeah. He said, well, I bet this guy got bumped to first class this week, and this guy is the head of the Florida Artificial Reef Program. He thought it was a great idea and said he could maybe get you a permit to do that in Florida. And I said, Dad, I'm too busy. You know, I got to work all the time. He says, well, I'll pay for it.
Okay.
And so I called up all my friends from University of Georgia and said, road trip to Florida. So we rode down to Florida. We built three reef balls, put them in the water. It turned out to be really hard to do that way. We did the beach ball method. Literally.
So you did it with a beach ball at first.
With a beach ball, and we had fiberglass fibers and chicken wire, and it kept collapsing. And we met some old guy who knew something about concrete and was telling these young college kids, mostly drinking beer and rum at the time, trying to figure it all out. Mm-hmm. But it worked. And then I started going to conventions with my mom for diving and realized, hey, there's a market here.
Sure.
Little did I know the dive instructors all say they're going to buy a reef ball, but they never do. They just support what we do. But, you know, I was enthusiastic. And so I gave up my day job. I took $50,000, put it in the bank, and said, I'm going to do this business till it runs out of money. I got my first order at $49,990, almost out of money.
Sure.
Cancun, Mexico, from Atlanta Submarine. And I've been doing that ever since now for 30 years, constantly doing this full-time job and love what I do. I've been to 54 countries around the world. We put reef balls in 70 countries. We put a million reef balls down. We restored 3/4 of 1% of the coral reefs we've lost in my lifetime. Doesn't seem like much, but if there were 150 other companies like mine doing it, we'd be keeping up with the loss at least.
Right.
So we're making positive impacts, and I love my life. I get to go diving. I get to go around the world. I get to go trekking everywhere. It's just a great life. I love it.
The thing that, you know, strikes me, this podcast speaks to a lot of people, I hope, in different walks of life. But I think the one thing that brings people here to sit around the fire is to share the story of taking that risk and taking that step that seemed uncomfortable. And for you, it's walking away from, I mean, you were busy, but you were making good money. You kind of had this roadmap out ahead of you, and you decided to, you know, take the Robert Frost side of things and take the road less traveled. I guess, what inside of you, or what pushed you to say, you know what, I'm going to give this thing hell and see what comes out the other side?
I think there was a combination of a lot of things in my life. First of all, you know, my father was a risk taker. He, you know, built his own company from scratch. I had a degree in business and international business and computers. I had reached the top of my pinnacle. I was literally dyeing my hair gray when I was 25 years old. So I could bill $500 an hour for my time, right? Because you can't look like a consultant and be that young and be that smart.
Right.
So I had already achieved what everybody kind of wants to do. And I realized that life was really, it's a short thing that you're here to leave a mark, to leave something for your kids. I realized if I built a reef ball, we were designing it to last more than 500 years. So realizing that coral reef would keep growing around it. I was inspired by coral. My hobby was saltwater aquarium keeping was one of the things that kept me passionate when I was in London at the University of Georgia, away from the ocean, which was always my love. So I just kind of put them all together and said, how do I want to live my life? And I said, well, I could spend my time in consulting. Then I get all the money I need to go travel and go diving. And I get 3 weeks a year. And, you know, I get the house in Atlanta, which is going to be landlocked, and I'll be flying on a plane every day, but it'll be to work, not to someplace exotic, you know, from Texas to New York, you know, whatever, it's mostly domestic stuff.
Yeah.
Or I could take this one chance, and it's a passion, it's a dream. And instead of saving my money to go diving, I'll get paid to go diving. And I said, you know, I can also make jobs doing this. I could employ people around the world. I have a big sense of international travel. I traveled a lot because of my international business degree.
Right.
And I realized that the world doesn't really have fences, that we thought all these different cultures were so different than us. But when you get there, you realize they're all the same. And what's more the same than fish, right? There may be a border, but the fish don't respect that.
Right.
So, if, you know, they're going to swim right across from one to the other. We have same problems with our oceans, and just like we do with our environments and our campfires and everything else. So it just made a whole lot of sense to put all that together, to get my travel in, and I will never regret it. Now there's more than 400 people around the world working for this. Mm-hmm. I know that I've made a mark for the rest of my life, and I'll keep doing this for the rest of my life. We get vindicated by people like Kenny Chesney that love what we do and support what we're doing, but we also make our own money. We have made a business that has a product to sell, so we don't have to rely on donations completely. So if somebody does give us money, that can go just straight to the concrete and building, because we can earn our money for our own salaries and keep the office open, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it my best jobs in the world have been the most high paid jobs and the most varied jobs. I hated flipping Whoppers at Burger King because I was doing the same thing, right?
Right.
And I was only making minimum wage. By the time I was consultant, I was solving people's problems around the world and making more money. Reef ball is the most challenging thing in the world. You go to a different place. Every place is a different project. One place you're helping fish. One place you're helping coral. One place you're stopping pollution. One place you're getting the community together and educating kids. It's just really dynamic. We're saving beaches from erosion. Just about any problem you can imagine, particularly that has to do with the ocean and the coast, is interconnected with ecosystem of the reefs, the mangroves, the estuaries, the water systems. And then it turns out reef balls work in freshwater too.
Yeah.
So now I get to go to lakes and rivers, and we got reef balls going in Utah and Arizona and Kentucky and Tennessee. So it turns out I can go anywhere in the world, including the mountains. So now I get everything.
Yes.
And I get paid to do it, you know, and people appreciate what I'm doing. So when you go on vacation, you go to the Maldives Islands, and you see the inside of a resort, or you go on a cruise line and you see the out island of the cruise line. Well, I go there and I get to experience all the same things you do, but I'm working for the resort. So then I go home with the workers and I get the local food and I get taken around to the local town and I learn what the locals are like. So I get an even better vacation than you'll ever get. I get
right.
all the great stuff plus all the local stuff that you would never see because right. you're just there on vacation. So what more could you want in life? It's not about money anymore. I've also seen a lot of very wealthy people that aren't happy. We all need our basic needs met, right? We all need to send our kids to college. We all need to have good clothes and health care. But after that, what do you want? Three houses? That's three times the maintenance. You want $5 million? That means you're going to have a lawyer and defend yourself from being sued all the time, that, you know, or you're going to spend all your time fixing things that break. So I found the perfect balance, I believe, in life is finding something that you really love doing, doing it so well that you'll make enough money to survive, which is all you really need, and mm-hmm. work hard enough and work strong enough to be able to get all those basic needs met, right? So if right. you drop down and you are sick, or your kids aren't going to college, you do what you got to do. And I love to work. So it's only because I love the job I picked. If I was yeah. a consultant, I don't know if I would still love the work. It was getting old after 7 years. Right. You know, I'm in a suit and tie every day. I'm getting on a plane every day. That sounds great for about the first week until you can't get a girlfriend to come because you're on a plane every day. It's just right. like, well, that sounded great when I met you, but, you know, when are you coming home, honey? You know, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Now I take my fiance with me wherever I go. Hey, I'm right. teaching you how to dive and how to do stuff. And actually, we met diving, so I'm pretty lucky my fiance dives. So
nice. Yeah. Shared interests are always good.
Yeah, and the people you meet in Reef Ball, just like you do in camping, are typically people that are doing good for the world. I mean, you don't go camping right. unless you really respect the earth, unless you're trying to make a connection with yourself or your soul or nature. Mm-hmm. Same kind of thing with ocean people and particularly nonprofit work. The people we meet from the people that are literally making a living, catching a fish or feeding their daughter with a fish, all the way to the multinational corporations that are trying to do good. They're all trying to do something good. So you meet the best people in the world. You may go right. bad countries that have great people, and you tend to find those good people because their heart's somewhere, you know, so that's helpful too. You know, keep yourself around positive people and you'll have a better life.
Yeah. The community aspect is huge. And you see that across every outdoor space, that the people, like you just said, the people who are out and connecting with nature in a certain way are doing that because it's fulfilling that innate desire that we have as human beings to find that greater purpose and to find that community and to find a place where we just feel good all the time. So if you go to those places, you find good people.
Well, and the outdoors and the ocean are the exact same. I remember when I was five, my grandfather took me camping for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And he took me by the hand and he said, first of all, I want to teach you what God is. I said, Grandpa, you're not very religious, are you? He says, no, I just want you to look around and look at everything. And you'll see God in your own eyes by looking at that butterfly, at that caterpillar, at that owl, at that deer. And the same thing with the ocean. What I found is when you first dive, you want to see the shark and the turtle, right? Or the manatee, right. something big, mm-hmm. whale maybe. But now that I dive, I look for the little tiny stuff. Just like when you go back to the woods and you turn over a rock and you find this really cool looking bug that's got all this iridescent colors.
Right.
And the more you turn over the rocks, the more you find. Or you look in the stream, or you look up in the fog and you see a bird up in a tree hidden. And then it comes up and fluffs up and you see its true colors. You know, that's the other thing that you find. And that's one of the reasons I have the passion for the reefs and the rainforest too. I really like a lot of rainforest trekking. Because of the biodiversity. Right. So I can go sit on that little tiny chunk of concrete that's 6 foot wide and 4 foot high in the Cayman Islands and literally sit in the bottom for an hour and just keep seeing stuff. And it's a complete television show to me. I mean, I'm completely enthralled with all the little fish and stuff that visit and things growing on the surface and things crawling around and things popping out. It's like being in a beautiful woods on a great creek and you just sit there and you see the fish jump and the birds come through and then the sun sets. You get that kind of feeling that you don't get in an office, right?
Right.
You can sit in your office all day long and you might see something on a computer screen, but there's not much happening there unless you got some music playing or something going on, right?
Right.
So that's a big part of life is really learning to appreciate what's there, whatever you call God. You can see beauty, whatever you want to call that, in the diversity. And the more you can, more things that are living there, the more likely you are to see something pretty cool to you, right? It's all about what's important to you. You know, I may love fish. You may love birds. Somebody else may love taking care of puppies, you know, whatever it is that their passions are, you know, pursue those things. That's important in life.
Yes.
And you won't regret it. When you look back, we're all coming and going in this planet. As long as you got those basic needs met, you know, expand your brain, learn more, have that passion for really getting into something and being the best at it and enjoying it. Because if you don't enjoy it, it's just a job. It's not any fun, you know? And I've seen so many people trapped that are not happy with what they're doing. So they hope for retirement, right? I'll work my whole life and I'll retire. Then they get there and they get cancer or they get bored, they get tired, and they're too old to travel, they're too old to dive, they're too old to hike. And all they do is sit and watch TV, you know, so, and die, you know?
Right.
Is that how you want to live your life? I don't think so. And today with the internet, we really can travel in a lot of different ways. Hopefully as COVID passes, we'll be able to start engaging more directly in travel again. Now is the time to learn more, research where you're going to go, where you're going to go camping, where you're going to go diving, and be ready to spring back into action and, you know, find those things and put them back in your life and find that joy again. That's important in life.
You talk about, you know, so these reefs that you're allowing to come back and to take hold in these places are going to be bigger year after year. And like in 500 years, that's what we're talking about. Like the long game in this project is reestablishing these reefs and, you know, adding biomass, which I mean, I read on your website, it's like 54 billion kilograms of biomass in the next 500 years from these reef balls, which is insane amount of.
It's amazing. Every reef ball produces about 450 pounds of biomass every year.
Wow.
And they're going to last 500 years. And that's just counting the size that they currently are.
Right.
So the studies we've done are only on 4-foot by 6-foot cubes or whatever size modules we're studying.
Yeah.
But you have to understand that in 500 years, it's going to be, we've got reef balls now that are only 20 years old that are the size of this room, and you can't see the reef ball, and it's a whole thriving. So that's got to be the equivalent of at least 100 reef balls. So if we actually did the exponential calculations, it's even more. And that presumes that water quality stays good and that coral can continue to grow. Reef balls function as habitat even without coral, you know, because they mimic trees, if you will,
right?
Just like on land. But as they keep growing, just like a tree that grows, you know, if you keep cutting the tree back, it's only going to be that big as a bush, still habitat for a bird. But if you let it grow into a tree, it's habitat for 100 birds. Same thing with the reefs.
Right.
And, you know, we do natural growth on them as well as planted growth. So we can also, just like a forest, we can plant the forest and come back a little faster. Or we can just seed the forest and let it grow, and it's going to grow naturally on its own. We do it both ways with the foundation. And we don't just do coral reefs. We do oyster reefs. We do kelp reefs. We do cold water. We're in every continent. We're in every, just about every country with water you can imagine. And growing every day still. I mean, we're constantly adding new sites and new places, and so it's just pretty neat.
Yeah, it's amazing. And it's a long game. And I think that's so hard for people who are motivated and they want to leave an impact. They see things in a human life paradigm, which is, you know, if you're lucky, 80 to 100 years old. How do you see past that? And how do you have this goal that's, you know, I want this to continue? I mean, if you were to drop dead in this interview right now, you still have those things that are in the ocean cementing your legacy.
Yeah. And I built an organization to keep doing it. It's something I think I got from my father and my mother as a combination, but I've always been a long-term thinker. I've always been able to balance my future happiness with my current happiness. Mm-hmm. I always want to have a great day, but I always do something every day for the future too. And I always try to do something for the future that's going to make my next day great or somebody else's day great. Because I do believe we're in a community, right? So if you make this cool guitar,
yeah,
and one day I learn how to play guitar, I might appreciate your work. And if I make this cool reef and one day you get to go diving and you happen to be on it and you spark on diving, then I've done something for you. That's why we're in a community. We all got to find those passions of what we're best at. But it's really important, especially with young kids today, I'm finding we are living a society now where so much is now, because the internet comes at us so fast. Sometimes we do forget about the future. We just worry about the moment, but that's not going to guarantee you something. You know, you plant a seed today with the thought of harvesting it next season. You plant an oak tree today with the thought it's going to be 10 years before you get shade on your house. You plant a coral today with the thought of, you know, if I wipe one out, it's going to take 500 years to come back. So maybe I got to plant one for my next kids. Give you a good story on that. I was in China and we were doing a tour of the palace and they were introducing me around. I was in with a bunch of CEOs at a society of CEOs. And one guy said, I got someone here at the palace that makes reefs too. I said, oh, really? Somebody else makes reefs? He said, yeah, would you like to see one? So we walked around the palace and here's this beautiful slab of limestone with all these caves and interconnected. And I'm like going, that's better than a reef ball. That is the most fantastic thing I've ever seen. But it was just way, you know, too elaborate. I figured Chinese labor must take them 1,000 years to carve it. He said, no, the guy carves that in like 20 minutes. I said, 20 minutes? How does he do that? He said, well, I'll take you over to the place where we do the quarry in the rock next week. Next week, I go over, meet this guy. There's this big slab of solid limestone, like square, been cut. He walks over with a spoon. And he carves in 25 holes in it. And then he brings the crane over. Crane picks up, drops it into the river right beside it. He says, that's how we do it. I said, well, that's a big rock. He says, well, it's in about 100 years, it's going to be perfect. I said, 100 years, how am I going to do this? He says, well, your son's going to buy from my son. And that's all the labor that's involved.
Right.
So they think very, very long term, right? So
interesting.
He's planting those for his kid. All the work's being done by the river, and he harvested and he pulled one out that his great great grandfather had made. And see here, here's how it looks.
That is so amazing. Like, what a great story.
You know, so but Americans are not really trained for that, are we?
Right. You know? Yeah. It's like the Instagram lifestyle.
It is. If it's not available on your feed that moment, it may not be worth doing. Well, that's not always the case.
Sure, sure.
Sometimes the best things are worth waiting for or working.
You touched on this a little bit earlier about the education and outreach portion of things, which I think comes naturally for people who are passionate about what they're doing. And I think it's something that is intensely important. And we talk about this almost every episode because I love to talk to people who are like you, like passionate and connected with their work and just ready to take on the world and storm and break through the wall and make a difference. So when you talk about the education and outreach, that hits my heart. And I'm like, okay, yeah, we can teach people what we're doing, how we're doing it, and why it's important. And hearing you say you're doing it in freshwater areas and you're doing it in these areas where you're restoring coral reefs and you're doing it pretty much everywhere at this point. How do you see that education and outreach portion of your business as like an important facet of what you're doing?
Well, I should probably step back and say exactly what the Reef Ball Foundation's mission statement is. We're a global nonprofit organization that works around the world to restore oceanic habitat. So we're making the trees of the world underwater, right?
Sure.
So our primary goal is to protect and preserve ocean habitat. Well, we do that by putting a reef ball in and growing habitat. But the idea is if you are a kid and you put a reef ball in and you grow a coral on it, you're going to be sitting around the dinner table talking to your grandfather and your father, and you're going to be saying, hey, I just planted a coral out there. Don't throw your plastic bag in the water because it's going to wrap around my coral and kill it. Then that jet education from the kid that made the reef ball just sparked why something under the water is important. If you burn the forest down, everybody sees it. You burn down a coral reef, maybe nobody notices it. Not many people, actually, only about 2% of the people on the whole planet will ever even stick their face under the water to look anything other than an aquarium or maybe a TV show.
Right.
Not everybody's a diver or a snorkeler, even has the opportunity to get to the ocean.
Sure.
So what we say is also when you make a reef ball, you'll see how hard it is. Now, we got it really easy. I think you can make a reef ball in an hour and put it in for a couple $100 and have it planted with corals and going. But that's still a lot of effort compared to saving the reef. So don't drop the anchor on in the first place. Maybe don't pour fertilizer on your yard if you're next to the sea, or mitigate that in some way. Mm-hmm. So we spend a lot of time doing education to stop the reef damage so we don't have to build reefs, right? Because our mission statement is to preserve and create the habitat. So I would love for the whole world to put me out of business, right? I shouldn't have to go out there and restore reefs. We unfortunately do, because as a society, we even if you have the best intentions and you carve a trail into your favorite backpacking place, you did carve a trail and you did cut something up to get there.
Right.
You better do something back to make up for that a little bit. So, you know, you build some fire pits or something so you don't do more damage. So that outreach and education goes all the way. And then it comes back to us. This is that long-term thing. I had a student that in eighth grade in St. Augustine, Florida, her name was Rebecca. And I taught her how to build reef balls about 25 years ago. And she called me about 5 years ago. And she said, "Hey, Mr. Barber, how are you doing? Do you remember me?" I said, "No." She said, "Well, it was Rebecca. And you taught me about that. You really inspired me. And Mr. Stewart's class, and it was really, really, or Mr. Stewart's class, was really, really great." I said, "Well, wonderful. I'm glad you had a great experience." I said, "You know, thanks for calling me back. I really appreciate it." She said, "That's not why I'm calling you. I got a $3 million project for you. I'm a coastal engineer now, and I took the lessons to what you're doing." You know, so it comes back to you as well, right? When you teach, people learn, and they teach others, and people grow, and then they realize the value of what you're doing, and then they replicate it. So the only reason why I have made that many reef balls is not because I'm out there making every reef ball. It's because I take molds and I take them to people and I say to you, "Here's a mold. Let me show you how to do it. Put it in the water. The only rule is you follow my rules the first time. After that, every time you improve it, you call me back and I'll call everybody else that I've trained how to build a mold and tell them what your improvement is, and they can all improve theirs, right? And then they keep feeding it back. So the more molds I put out there and the more people I teach, the more they find something that's best for their environment or their situation, feed it back. And then what we do is the quality control. We put it through scientists and engineers, make sure that your idea is really good, that doesn't trap a turtle or do something bad, and then vet it back out and say, "Okay, that's now a new option." We had somebody that learned how, if you could take a Coca-Cola bottle, glass one, turn it upside down, put it in a reef ball so it's completely encased in concrete and completely dark inside. Had to be facing down. And it, when it's put on the bottom, it's facing down so the sand doesn't build up in it. And it's smooth inside and dark. And it's the perfect home for an octopus to lay its eggs. So
amazing.
You can only put one in every ball because two octopuses have a fight.
Yeah.
And if you put one down, every time you go diving on it, you'll see shells in front of that hole, where she's taken her food back and builds her babies, protects them, spits them out, and then replicates octopus. So just one little thing is still the same reef ball.
Yeah.
Voila, we have an octopus home, you know? So those kind of innovations, and for everything from coral to sea urchins to kelp, have come not from me being smarter, but from my clients being smarter and teaching me. And then we just process that information and get it back out. We're always developing too. And then we send those ideas out to people and say, "Try this. You said you had a problem with your birds weren't getting enough food. Try putting a reef ball down low. See if they can dive in and get the fish. Do a scientific study on it. Let us know what you found out." "Oh, yeah, we found out at this depth they have enough room to dive and still get their fish." You know, boom. The next person that has that problem, we solved it for them.
Yeah.
So that's where the 30 years of experience comes in. We're not just selling a chunk of concrete. We're selling 30 years of experience, right? And lots and lots and lots of what's what we call a design reef. Now every reef ball is different. You see something that looks like this in the background. Well, that's just the basic shape and size. It happens to be very stable, very easy to make, but every single one's different. We have different surface textures, different concrete chemistries. I mean, for oysters, we do something different than for coral.
Sure.
Different size holes, predator exclusion devices, anchors in some situations, caves and interconnected holes in other situations, big, tall reef balls for breaking waves for surfing or keeping a beach from eroding away, mm-hmm. very small reef balls for little tiny fish that are breeding and for eggs. You name it, we've come up with it over these years, and we're still innovating every day. So that's part of that whole invention process I learned from my dad.
Amazing, amazing. And you've mentioned community several times in just our conversation. And I want to ask you personally, do you think community is the key to protecting these coastal ecosystems?
It's the only way it works. I don't like doing projects in countries where I don't have the locals building and doing the work, and they have to have skin in the game. We have a grant program. We provide money to people to do this, but we never provide 100%. The locals may only have labor and time to give us. They may have a little money to kick in, but they've got to have skin in the game, because it's just like that kid. When the locals build a reef, they build it for their own problems. If I come in and say, oh, you need a reef there because you need fish, they're like, we don't need fish at all. We need lobster. You don't know us, right? They build that reef for what they need, and they protect it because they built it, right? They know what their problems are. If you're in your backyard, you know what the problems are in your area. You may not know how to solve them, and our technology may help you figure out, you know what your problem is. You need more of lobster, let's say. Mm-hmm. Well, we can get a scientist that shows how to make a lobster system that will get the larva from the 11 stages they got to get through to get down to a reef ball to produce more for you so that you can take a few and leave a few for the environment. We can help them with that, but they got to be able to articulate the problem, and they've got to do it so they can do it themselves after we leave and keep doing it and teach other people in their community that need more lobster how to do it. So that community is really the key for any of this to work. Also, there's a lot of reasons why you wouldn't do a reef. And most of that is understanding, you know, what problems it could be. If I came in and said, okay, yeah, you need a reef, but you need it right there. And then the chief goes, hey, that's where our boats come through. You crack our boats up on the bottom, or that's where we net. Right. So you've got to have the community, or you're forcing a solution down someone's throat that's never going to work.
Right.
That said, you still need that global connection, because two communities may fish for the same fish. So they need to talk to each other and have rules about who gets to fish when and that kind of thing, or what section needs to be protected so you can take some on the other, or what areas are for diving only or recreation only for tourism, those kind of things. So there's a lot to it, but it starts with the community. It starts at regulation at the high end too. And we usually get that through permitting processes. We got to make sure that ball's not going to move around. We can't, you know, it can't do any harm. It can't trap a turtle. That's the other side of our quality control, is to make sure that chunk of concrete doesn't do anything that a natural reef won't do. You know, we've got to, at first, do no harm. We have to have extreme ethics when we're planting corals, touching corals. And, you know, we have to have extreme training. We do the same, just like an operating room. We have to clean our hands and have all these procedures. All that's been developed with that concept in mind, that at first you do no harm, you know. And being a nonprofit organization, we even let the scientists do the research. We only do stuff that's the scientists have already proven first works. We come up with ideas, then we send it to scientists, and then it comes back. But we make sure that our true volunteers and clients are only using tested, time-proven, always successful type projects. And so far in 30 years, everything we've done has been successful. So that's pretty cool.
That is pretty cool. You're obviously a smart guy, and I imagine that you love the process and the learning behind all of this. So as someone who, you know, studied business and traveled the world for business, what was it like for you to learn like the science behind these different things? And you're interacting with scientists in different countries, and you're learning like ecosystems, like you said, maybe it's not fish, maybe it's lobster here, or maybe we're building a different, I mean, the complexities are huge. What was it like for you to like get on the skill acquisition side of things and to learn and to talk and to learn like, you know, the scientific language?
You know, well, that goes back to, and this is where millennials, I think, have a big advantage. When I was 15 years old, I broke my arm and I got the first home computer ever made, the Tandy Radio Shack computer, right?
Nice.
So I grew up in the computer age. I went through and got a master's degree, and all a master's degree was a license to learn. In my entire life, I've been into computers. Reef Ball's been on the internet. You know, we had a web page in 1993. Barely the web was there, right? So my entire life, I don't ever stop studying. Every day, I spend an hour environmental scanning on the computer first. I'm constantly studying everything I could do. My dad always taught me, he said, if you're in a beauty salon, pick up a woman's beauty magazine. I'm like, why would I do that, Dad? He says, flip the pages, you're going to find something that'll apply to what you do. Don't ever stop learning.
Yeah.
So that said, I take all that computer knowledge and I try to put hands-on learning. And that's where maybe the millennials need more of. I was lucky enough to travel to 54 countries. Right now, I don't know anybody who's traveled in the last year, right? So we're getting some stunting on that goes. But hands-on learning is taking that what you've learned in on the computer and going out and actually doing. I can teach you how to build a reef ball in a weekend. I can send you a manual to do it, and it'll take you about a year of study to figure out how to do it. Because you can't ask questions. Things like mixing concrete is very visual. It's like your mom teaching you how to mix a cake, right? You got to have the batter consistency, just the right thing. I can give you the recipe, but your flour may have a little water in it. Your water, maybe you may be at a different altitude. You may have to make some adjustments. Mm-hmm. Your grandma can tell you on the fly how to do that. But as a book, you'd have to look it all up and study the science of altitude and all those kind of things.
Yeah.
So you have to do a little bit of both. All of our teams, we start by teaching everybody to communicate with each other with the basics. Mm-hmm. So if you were on one of our dive teams, we would say, even when they're with the scientists, you say the coral name, that's the common name first. Hey, that's a finger coral. And if you know it, then you say, that's an acupora or an acupora coral, or however you could pronounce it, because it might be different in a different country, right?
Right.
So the idea is you don't want to make somebody, because the scientists will always say, that's cervicornis, you know, and everybody goes, I don't know what that is. And so right.
In one ear, out the other at that point.
But if you say the basic first, common language, same thing with legal speak, right? We say, if you write a contract, write it down what you want to say first. Then you can send it to your lawyers and have them jar it all up. But it's not going to mean anything if someone doesn't understand it.
Right.
So we try to get down to those basics of teaching everybody everything on a basic level, but letting them hear the science, and then they might spark on it. They might learn it. They might go get a scientific degree, and then they can talk turkey when they're with other scientists.
Mm-hmm.
But for now, just keep teaching by starting with the basics and letting other people know that you know, but don't make it look like you're an expert and they don't know.
Right.
So we try to do that all the way through the process, and that really helps too.
I would be... I think negligent not to ask about your partnership with Kenny Chesney, because it is such a cool thing. And I think Kenny Chesney is a very progressive guy, and he's definitely out there to make a difference in his life. He's definitely purpose driven. How did you guys connect? How did your, I mean, two passionate dudes on different missions protecting the same thing? How did that collision course happen?
Well, I think a lot of people in the world have a big, deep passion for ocean habitat. Kenny was on a trip one time off of Jacksonville and went diving and saw all the fish on an artificial reef and just sparked like I did the first time I dove on a reef, you know, and when you see an artificial reef and you see it's just like a natural reef when it's done right, it's you're really like, wow, this, you know, you're diving in a desert of sand and all of a sudden you come across an object that is full of fish and stuff. Kenny's always had boats. He has a house in the Virgin Islands. His fans are very connected with the ocean. He's like the country Jimmy Buffett of the world, right? He's really into the ocean. And so he started researching, you know, and that's what these guys do. They're on a bus going between tours. He's on the road all the time. They do the same thing that I do. They sit in computers and they research. And, you know, reef balls, we're the market leader in artificial reefs. We've done this around the world for longer than anybody's done it. Mm-hmm. And he just... got led to us, his got people on his crew that introduced the concept, and he said, this is something I want to do. And we partnered up and then started No Shoes Reefs, which is the his nonprofit organization that just raises money specifically for reef balls. And then Katie's people are able to direct where that money goes, so they can say, hey, I'd like to send some money to West Palm Beach to put a reef down there, and boom, we take our molds, we go down there, we build a reef for him and give him a reef.
Yeah.
Most of the time he wants to just do stuff on the margin because he loves what we do. So let's say that you're a client of Reef Ball Foundation, built 100 reef balls. You're getting ready to deploy them on a permitted area. You've spent a year doing this to get all your permits and everything ready. And the barge that shows up that day has got room for 20 more reef balls.
Yeah.
So, but you didn't budget for that because you were on a government grant, let's say, and you know, you're contracted to put 100 balls in. Well, Kenny will say, hey, Todd, send them 20 more balls. Let's load up that barge. It's free barge going out. It's just the cost of concrete, right? Boom. So he has very little money and he makes everybody more efficient, or he just makes an introduction. Like a lot of times we have clients that just need some help. Kenny gets on the horn and says, hey, we need volunteers over in the Bahamas right now for Paradise Cove to plant some corals. Anybody who wants to show up, we'll give you a free t-shirt. Boom. We got 5,000 people there. Corals. Let's do a beach cleanup. Boom. People show up and clean up the beach, you know, whatever problems we see, you know, there's plastic floating across their reef balls and they're damaging our things. Well, let's go get them cleaned up. Boom. Yeah. We get it done. So it's just that working together with the No Shoes Reefs and No Shoes Nation folks to take all those assets and get, you know, people there when we need it or the right resources to magnify what we do. You know, we know that what we do works. We've done it for 30 years. We know there's an unlimited market for, we need more coral. We need more reefs because we're destroying it, unfortunately, as humans. And that's a whole sad side of the world.
Right.
But we've got something positive to do about that. And so we just focusing on that. And Kenny has just really been great to us. No Shoes Reefs are wonderful partners. We partner with Deep Apparel and a lot of other really great partners that are using their products, putting brand names on them for people to wear and be proud of and be part of the whole movement. And it's just helping us accelerate our growth around the world. So more reefs is good for everybody.
I hear you. Along the same lines, let's say, you know, money, governments, people, you know, human drawn lines, nothing's an issue for you. I'm talking moonshot opportunity. What would be the moonshot for Reef Ball in the future?
Well, I think the moonshot's actually happening. I mean, what we really try to do is just teaching more and more people, getting more and more molds out there, getting more and more people creating and sending information back to us to keep going it better. So the moonshot, we doubled in size every year in 30 years.
That's amazing.
I don't think we could grow any faster than that. Right. COVID has been a challenge because we can't get in the field to train as many people. And as I mentioned, it's kind of hands-on training. So my moonshot is the world goes back to normal pretty soon so we can get back out there and help hands-on. We're learning how to do this all by Zoom and you know, other types of remote ways, but it's not the same as diving with somebody and helping them plant a coral, getting it right, smelling, touching, feeling things. So that's the moonshot, is curing the earth so we can keep doing what we do. The other moonshot, of course, is for technology to continue to improve. We're working every day with 3D printing. I think that's probably going to be the future of reefs.
Wow.
Right now we're constrained by what we can do with molds. Unfortunately, the cost is, you know, I can actually 3D print a reef ball. That's pretty freaking awesome, but it's going to be a while before I can do that cost effectively where we could put enough out there that makes a difference. So we've already 3D printed and put them in the water. So I can see where the technology is going to go. It's going to take some very creative minds and a lot of material science and better things to happen where I can do that anywhere in the world, any place. We go to really remote places too. Mm-hmm. So we have to dumb down to the, most common denominator, concrete's available everywhere right now. In the future, maybe these 3D machines will be available everywhere when people are printing their houses with them, for example. But right now, we're still building houses by hand, so we have to kind of go with that. So those would be some of the dream shots. So we're working a lot with genetically engineered corals that are not genetically engineered, but tested that might be more resilient to pollution or global warming, like that. There's always a lot of scientific hope for me. I really believe that man can solve our own problems if we work together and keep sorting out the problem. So I look to science. I look to volunteers. I look to creativity of humans. I look to a lot of those different things to hope that we can outrace the bad things that we're doing in the environment. Corals are kind of like orchids. They don't like change much. As humans, tend to change faster than they can change.
Right.
So I'm hoping that our technology can keep up with it enough that we can insulate them so they don't have to feel our change as much. So they'll be there for our kids. You know, I don't want to have to go scuba diving on Mars because I don't think they really have any good reefs up there yet. Maybe when we drill down, we'll find one, but so far.
Yeah. Nothing promising.
So
that's a great answer. Awesome. Before we head into the final five questions, is there anything that you think we've missed on that you want to bring up?
Well, you know, I could talk about reef balls all day. We've got all kind of divisions from planting mangroves to, you know, erosion control. But I think I'll leave that for the people to research on the web. We have tons of stuff on all of our websites. And all you have to do is Google reef ball and you can find all kind of neat stuff. And maybe we'll do a future podcast and drill into some of those if you need some more podcast time.
Absolutely, man. And your guys' resources are fantastic too. So I'll tag those in the show notes so anybody that's listening can check those out. All right, Todd, final five questions. You ready?
I'm ready.
All right, let's do this. First one is easy. Where can we find you guys on social media? And if someone wants to get involved with Reef Ball, what's the best way to do so?
Find me on social media. I'm out there all over the place. Facebook's probably the place, best place to get me. If you want to get me personally, I'm just Todd Barber in Nokomis, Florida. We have a reefballfoundation.org website, which is the primary website for public use. As you get into that, you can drill down into erosion control and different things like that. Mm-hmm. And there's reefball.com, which will take you over to those as well. You can find me on Skype. You can find me on Instagram. If you Google Todd Barber or Reef Ball, you'll find me. Like I said, we've been on the web for 30 years now. So we're out there. You might have to find some old pages out there, but it'll all lead you back to us like a big spider web out there. So right. I'm really easy to find, and I really try hard to answer each and every question that's sent to me. Sometimes I travel a lot and it may take me a little longer, but any of your viewers out there, contact me directly. I'll answer the phone and get you to whoever in our organization can help you if I can't. So buck stops here kind of thing in our organization. We try to have the most senior person in the office answer the phone when possible.
Yeah,
instead of the receptionist. So find me out there and shoot me any questions, whatever. I'll be glad to help.
Very cool. And if someone wants to get involved, is the best thing to do to volunteer or to donate money? How can people listening, you know, let's say like in the Midwest, get involved with what you're doing?
Well, there's a million different ways. I mean, you can get involved with Kenny Chesney's movement to No Shoes Reefs. That's a great way for the average person to get involved. If you happen to be lucky enough to be near the ocean or near an ocean project, seek out a reef ball project and get involved with your local community. I strongly suggest if you really want to get deep in Reef Ball Foundation and join one of our coral teams or really become a serious volunteer, friend me on Facebook and ask me to put you into our, we have a group page where we do all the reef ball news. And basically what we ask people to do is monitor that page. And when you see a project that sparks you, whether it be coral planting or something near you, then contact us and say, I want to get involved in that project. We'll try to hook you up with whoever's running that project. And you work your way up with time. Nobody has a, you know, nobody starts here by calling us up and saying, we want a job with the Reef Ball Foundation. They start by working on a project and we say, oh, wow, you look pretty good at what you're doing. Why don't you try this? And eventually they create their own jobs and they entrepreneur within our organization. So mm-hmm. we're very bottoms up in that way. We don't really have like a formal program. We're like a big family. You find a fit. And if you can contribute, you're a fit with us and you grow with us. That's just sort of the way we do it. So that would be another great way to volunteer. You can contact us directly at any time. And if you have a particular track or interest, if you're into building concrete or if you're into planting mangroves or if you're into cold water reefs. So just getting involved in any project will slowly draw you into the foundation. We have so many different divisions and organizations. There's a lot of places you can interface. A lot of your local fishing clubs, you know, your nonprofit organizations tend to, you know, do a lot of projects with us. So they could be involved that way. Places that plant oysters in the Chesapeake Bay, surfing organizations, Audubon societies, mm-hmm. science museums, Tampa Bay Watch. They all have volunteer programs with reef balls involved. Chesapeake Bay Foundation is a good one. So look at any of our partners as well. Is a great way. Also, just buying apparel from No Shoes Reefs, great stuff. And a portion of those go to directly to building reefs. That's another great way if you're in the Midwest. Just support us by looking us up on social media and saying thank you. You know, just like what we do, share it with other people. Once you've heard the name Reef Ball, it's amazing. You'll start seeing on the news everywhere. It'll pop up and you'll get more and more involved.
Amazing. Amazing. Yeah. Awesome. I'll tag a lot of that stuff in the show notes as well to make it easy for anybody listening to go and get involved. And the gear is cool. I wish I could show everybody that's listening your Tumblr. It's super cool. I'm probably going to have to pick one up for myself. All right. Question number two, what is your favorite outdoor activity and why?
Well, you know, I love all things outdoors, but I'm going to have to go with diving on this one. I've been diving since I was 13. You know, mm-hmm. I really do love all the outdoor things out there, but I consider diving one of those sports that you can do just like hiking anywhere at any time, at any age of life. You can be 94 years old and they can put you on the back of a boat, drop you in the water in cool, clear water and dive. Or it could be an athletic sport where you're going down holding your breath, swimming near the edge of death, fighting off sharks, shooting fish, and just about anything else that you want to do. So because it's so varied and there's so many countries I can go diving in, I can dive just about anywhere. I went trekking in through the mountains of Malaysia, thinking we were going to go to the ocean. We weren't. There was one little stream, and I had my mask stuck in my face in the stream, and I saw Chinese betta fish in its natural habitat. So you just never know. Anytime you stick your head in the water, you can see something new and something cool you wouldn't see on land. So diving is going to have to be it, and I'll have to leave it at that. Although there's getting some new technology in diving now with rebreathers and battery-operated hookah rigs, so it's also getting exciting now. It's starting to get James Bondy out there. So even the average person can dive that couldn't dive before.
Amazing. Awesome. I've always been a little bit afraid of diving, but I think it's something that I would find intensely interesting, so maybe I'll have to give it a shot.
Yeah, don't be afraid of it, but if you are at an age where you might be fearful, you really want to have a good, solid, maybe a personal instructor the first time and go someplace with really clear water. Mm-hmm. I've got my fiance over here. Carla, come say hi. Carla is the expert at teaching people how to dive that really have never dove before.
Hi.
Carla. Hello.
You're the expert?
Oh, well, he claims that I am, but I just get very, very excited to help people learn to dive and the excitement that brings me and to them. And it's opening up an entirely new world. It's like going to another planet. So it really is incredible, intense.
Yeah. And to hear that you're so passionate about it and like excited to do it, that is like the best person to instruct somebody who is a little scared.
Absolutely. And it does not get old at all.
Right.
You know, and it doesn't matter the age or, you know, it doesn't matter who it could possibly be that's coming in. And even the fearful, you can kind of sense that and put them at ease. And, once they're down there, it just kind of goes away because the excitement and what they're experiencing, what they're seeing is right. Just amazing. So
awesome. Well, I'm going to hire you for my, my first dive ever.
Bring it.
That sounds
Let's
exactly
go.
What I need. Yeah. Awesome. All right, Todd, question number three, where is your favorite place that you've ever been to outdoors?
Oh boy. I get asked that question a lot too. And I always normally would phrase that with, what kind of thing about the outdoors do you like? Because I go some places for food, some places for sunset, some places for rock climbing, some places for snow skiing, some places mm-hmm. for diving.
Right.
So without being able to qualify that, now I have to go back to my favorite place. And I would have to say, I really like New Zealand and I really like Costa Rica. So both of those are places that I would probably pay to go if it wasn't even on a reef ball trip, right? I really,
right.
really like those places a lot.
Yeah.
But my favorite outdoor place, when I was 13, I went through National Outdoor Leadership School, which is a lot like Outward Bound and the Wind River Range in Wyoming.
Mm-hmm.
And I would probably say if I was just going to go outdoors and go hiking and camping, that's probably the area that I would go to just because I have so many intense memories of very intense living, you know, a month in the woods on my own as a 13-year-old and growing up as a man at that time. So I have a lot of fond memories there too, but I'd have to bracket it and say there's really no one great place outdoors because the more you travel, the more you go, you're always going to find someplace better. There is no such thing as a best. If there is, then there's no reason to live. So always remember the next best place is the next one I'm going to.
Yes.
And that'll be Bahamas this weekend. So Paradise Cove, give a plug for them as well.
All right.
Great place to go diving. They got reef balls and 4 foot of water. Great coral reef, beautiful beach, beautiful resort. All the guests leave and the staff leaves at 2:00. So the whole evening, you got this entire coral reef and beach to yourself. Found a coin there from the 1400s that just popped out of the beach when I was diving there. So that's where we're going to go have next week here and set them up to build some more reef balls. In fact, Kenny Chesney fans are going to be invited to go down there and be able to rent out some of those rooms in their special package and help us build some reef balls and put some coral in. So there's my plug for Paradise Cove, Bahamas, go.
yes. I love it. Question number four is a little tricky. What is something that you see today as a blessing that in the moment you might've saw as a mistake?
Well, that one's going to require some thought. I've made a lot of mistakes in my life that turned out to be blessings. Maybe, should I say this one now?
Should we have our answer?
A blessing that is that I thought was a mistake that is a blessing. When my when I was a kid, I skipped second grade to third grade because we moved from the north to the south, and I didn't learn how to cursive write. And I never learned how to cursive write until seventh grade when they probably figured out. And to this day, my handwriting is atrocious. I should have been a doctor. I couldn't read my own writing, so I learned how to memorize things photographically, which kind of gave me one hell of an advantage in college because I could just look at a book and read it without writing.
Right.
My mom figured this out and bought me a typewriter for Christmas. And the next day after I had my new typewriter, she took her fingernail polish and painted all the keys. So I had to learn how to touch type. And then later, as you know, I broke my arm when I was 15 and got my first computer, and that changed my life trajectory completely. Mm-hmm. So that thing that I thought was terrible, which was I couldn't write, turned out to be the skill that got me the start in life. I got my first job at IBM in a co-op because I was so skilled at computers. I was teaching my teacher's computers back then. That launched my career and allowed me to do Reef Ball with the seed money from consulting. So sometimes bad things can turn into a blessing later, and it goes the other way around. Sometimes things you think are blessings can later be not so good. All you can do is do your best to project to the future and think of all as many consequences as you can and go with your gut.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Try to, you know, balance the future with the present. You know, use that mathematical brain to calculate, but then you got to go with your gut, you know, and don't be afraid of decisions. If your gut says to do something and you've thought about it and you're not just acting on, there's a difference between impulse and gut.
Sure.
Gut is after you've thought it all through and it's too complex of a decision to make. Impulse is, I just want one more of these. Okay, I haven't thought about if I got to drive home yet or not, right? So
right.
There's a difference. But go with your gut when your gut has thought about things as best you can. And you're always going to be probably right, some mistakes and some good things. I'm not sure I answered that one well, but.
No, that was great. That was great. I think there's something people can take home. They didn't learn anything in this whole entire thing, which would be a total mistake. They at least learned that one here. So great answer. Great answer. Before question number five, Todd, I just want to take a second to acknowledge you and what you've done with your life. It's absolutely amazing. Everything from taking the gamble and going out and doing something that you just felt in your heart was right and taking that risk and quite frankly, changing the world. Changing the future for generations and generations and having that foresight to just do the work, get it done, have fun, be passionate about it, spread the love, and create something that's going to go on for hundreds of years after you're gone. It's amazing. So thank you for everything that you do.
Very good.
All right. Question number five. You ready?
I am ready.
All right. When it's all said and done, when you are dead and gone, and all we have left to talk about at the campfire, when we're having some of the Blue Chair rum and maybe some Maker's Mark, all we have left to talk about is your legacy. What do you hope we're talking about?
I really hope you're talking about Reef Balls. I'm going to be buried in one day, and that's where I'm going to be on the bottom looking at fishes, right?
That's amazing.
We have a whole division that puts cremated remains into Reef Balls, and I've written down where I want to go and exactly where I want to be placed, as a lot of my friends have done. Mm-hmm. But my legacy really is going to be people diving and diving on a reef ball and not even knowing it's a reef ball. So when you're really going to love what I do is when you dive on it and you don't even know that I did it. It's just going mm-hmm. to be, wow, I'm diving on a beautiful coral reef. Look at all the beautiful fishes. And I hope you get the same feeling from diving that I get from it. Just like you have the same feeling when you walk through the woods and you see that butterfly landing on that cool little knotty tree that looks amazing in a certain sunset from a certain location at a certain time of day. So that's my gift to the world. And all I care is that people have a chance to enjoy the oceans and the ocean habitat. And that's amazing. My legs.
Amazing. Great answer, Todd. Thank you so much for your time. It was amazing. I feel like we could go on for a couple more hours, but like you said, maybe we'll save that for a future podcast. We'll check back in on you. Thank you so much. Have a great rest of your night.
All right, you too.
And that is that for this episode of Camping Out with the legendary Todd Barber. Man, Todd had my mouth wide open half the time between his epic stories and plentiful wisdom. He is laser focused on the mission, and his indisputable work ethic combined with his charm make me believe that there is not much that this man cannot do. Now, if you're thinking of what you can do, head on over to the show notes and get involved with No Shoes Reefs and the Reef Ball Foundation. There's a lot of resources tagged in the notes there if you want to learn more, or if you want to get involved. I really would encourage you guys to reach out to Todd and get involved if it's something that you're passionate about. While you're at it, go ahead and share this episode with friends, family, anybody who you think can enjoy this wonderful conversation, some of the bits of wisdom that we picked out of there, and leave a 5-star rating in Apple Podcast if you could. That would mean so much to us. I appreciate and love all of you people who keep tagging along and pulling up your chair by the campfire. We'll be back next week, but until then, remember, adventure comes to those who go.